More information about Chastity Brown and all of the 2025 Landmark Live concerts can be found at thelandmarkcenter.org.
Fresh Air Community Radio is KFAI-FM Minneapolis-St. Paul. Online and archived at KFAI.org, the community's true voice.
This is North Star Stories, voices from where we live. Today in Minnesota,
the state releases new information about hemp licensing for next year. Then, an artist community is using unique ways to connect to new audiences. And the Minnesota Zoo has a new permanent resident. I'm Gracie J. The Minnesota Department of Agriculture is now accepting applications for 2026 hemp growing and processing licenses. Licenses apply only to industrial hemp, not cannabis or hemp-derived products. This year's process includes new license fees, added costs per location, and all hemp lots must undergo pre-harvest THC testing, the primary psychoactive compound found in the cannabis plant. More information is available on the department's website. In today's main story, a grassroots publication in northern Minnesota is making it easier for artists to find new audiences. It all starts with a simple question: where's the show? Lydia Moran has more.
In a world of music streaming algorithms and oversaturated social media, a grassroots resource is connecting artists and audiences the old-fashioned way. Christy Olson started a paper zine called On the Record in 2023. She wanted to make it easier for people to attend events in the Twin Ports area, also known as Duluth, Minnesota, and Superior, Wisconsin.
Some of them run out within 24 hours.
On the Record is a comprehensive calendar of arts events in the area. There's also career development resources, reviews, audition notices, poetry, and articles by local artists about the challenges facing creatives in 2025.
I have my handy-dandy spreadsheet.
Christy spends about 30 hours a week compiling the zine, in addition to working as a sound engineer at a local venue.
I sift through the Facebook events, pull up any snapshots of posters.
She says most calendars rely on artists to submit their shows, a task that can easily be forgotten about. But On the Record, make sure no one falls through the cracks.
And I also started this project a few months after my mom died of cancer. So partially with that manic energy that grief gives you, but also in honor of her as well, because she was a multidisciplinary artist.
Every other week, a team of volunteers distributes nearly 600 copies across the Twin Ports.
With media being defunded in the world right now, it's so valuable to have a physical, tangible thing you can pick up and take with you and keep in your purse.
When singer-songwriter Elsa Krantz moved to Duluth about 2 years ago, On the Record was their door into the arts community.
You can learn about something that's happening around the block, this really hyper-localized resource.
Elsa helped the zine obtain grant funding to cover printing costs. In the future, Christy hopes local arts-related businesses will sponsor the publication. She said grant money is drying up due to federal changes.
We inch closer and closer to dead internet theory every day.
Musician Ross Thorne is a founding member of the Twin Ports Artist Collective,
where it's really just bots commenting on bots' posts, liking bots' music, you know, all of this stuff. Nothing can take you away from the real world. Like, once you have that piece of paper in your hand, you're just engaging in so many aspects of, like, real community.
Ross said real community is key to sustaining the region's cultural resources.
We'll have a lot of up-and-coming artists that, like, find some success, and then they move away. And what I hope is that Duluth becomes a place where we pay very well, we uplift them so well, that they want to come back or they just stay here. You know, that we're creating this arts hotspot.
For North Star Stories, I'm Lydia Moran. Anything you want if you just take a little walk with
me down the path of your fears. You are listening to North Star Stories. Well, a 310-pound loggerhead sea turtle named Snooki is settling into her new home at the Minnesota Zoo. Stranded on the New Jersey shoreline in 2016, Snooki could not be released back into the wild due to a medical condition. Now, she'll make her permanent home in the zoo's 250,000-gallon Atlantic Reef habitat. Zoo officials say that the exhibit offers Snooki room to explore and swim, providing a dynamic environment for her continued care and recovery.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
While the state's housing stabilization program came to an abrupt end, then a city council decision has a northern community concerned about the environment, and Minnesota's soccer team reaches the Western Conference semifinals. I'm Chantel Sings. The state has officially ended its Medical Assistance Housing Stabilization Services program. The Department of Human Services says the move follows widespread fraud uncovered within the program, which helps seniors and people with disabilities find stable housing. The Department of Human Services is coordinating with counties, tribes, urban Indian organizations, and managed care organizations to identify resources to help people impacted by the program's ending. Next, a proposed data center in the northern part of the state has provoked strong community reactions and a lawsuit. Victor Palomino talks with the news director at Amper Station KAXE about the controversy.
The Hermantown City Council, near Duluth, recently voted to rezone land to allow for the possible development of a large-scale data center. That decision has sparked community pushback, with residents organizing a lawsuit to stop the project from moving forward.
There's a grassroots group called Stop the Hermantown Data Center, and they've joined forces with the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, which is the state's largest nonprofit environmental law firm. So they're just basically asking the court to require further environmental review for this data center and, you know, better application of state law to a project like this.
That's Chelsea Perkins, news director for Amper's member station, KAXE, KBXE, Northern Community Radio. She explained that many in the Hermantown area are concerned about the city's use of what's called an alternative urban area wide review, or AUAR, a planning tool used to study how different development scenarios might affect the local environment. Critics say it falls short of the more rigorous environmental impact statement process.
This AUAR process, however, is less stringent and doesn't necessarily require as much of a process. And that's where this group is saying, hey, wait a minute. We think you should be following this much more stringent process that's already laid out in state law. So that's where the conflict has arisen here.
Northern Community Radio has been covering the issue closely, attending public listening sessions organized by the State Environmental Quality Board and talking with residents about their concerns.
And there's definitely, you know, a lot of concerns for people who are going to be living right next to this particular data center. There's concerns about the amount of water they use, the amount of electricity they use, and just the overall quality of life for people who are living around those, and impacts on also property values, just as much as about the wildlife and environment of northern Minnesota.
Chelsea says the debate over the data center could influence future infrastructure proposals across Minnesota.
Lots of things to keep an eye on there, and it's something that we're certainly interested in seeing, you know, with the real estate available in northern Minnesota, whether that's something that more data centers may want to try to locate.
For now, the Hermantown community is waiting to see how the review process unfolds.
We did talk to city officials. They confirmed they received the lawsuit and that they'll be doing their appropriate review process and due diligence and follow the legal process. So we'll just have to keep an eye on as it moves through the court system, which, as we know, can sometimes be a slow process.
To listen to this and more stories from the northern part of the state,
they can find us at KAXE.org.
For North Star Stories, I'm Victor Palomino.
You are listening to North Star Stories. The Minnesota United pulled off a Major League Soccer playoff upset by defeating the Seattle Sounders, keeping their 2025 season alive. The team, also known as the Loons, battled to a 3-3 tie while down a player. Ultimately, the goalkeeper sealed the win in the 10th round of penalty shootouts. With the victory, Minnesota advances to the Western Conference semifinals, where they'll face San Diego. The team has been in the playoffs a total of 5 times in their 8 seasons.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
A new report accuses a Minnesota company of dumping electronic hazardous waste overseas, then how a Supreme Court decision can affect individual rights for some Minnesotans, and a new bill could expand Border Patrol access in the Boundary Waters. I'm Gracie J. Well, a new investigation accuses electronics retailer Best Buy of exporting hazardous electronic waste or e-waste overseas under the guise of recycling. The Basel Action Network's Brokers of Shame report tracked more than 10,000 U.S. shipping containers of discarded electronics. The report suggests Best Buy's recycling program may funnel electronics through brokers that export waste illegally or irresponsibly. Lawmakers are calling for full transparency, audits, and stronger oversight. Next, a recent Supreme Court decision allowing federal agents to use race for immigration stops has many concerned about racial profiling and individual rights. Jose Osoria examines how this ruling affects Minnesotans.
Justice Sotomayor has raised her voice in this case with precision, force, and conviction. Her words, quote, "We should not have to live in a country where the government can seize anyone who looks Latino, speaks Spanish, and appears to work a low-wage job," unquote, will echo long after this ruling unless we do more than remember them.
That is Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison praising U.S. Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor's strong dissenting opinion on a recent ruling by the court.
What's your name? Capellas? Capellas? Don't fight with me, all right? Put your hand behind your back, all right?
The Supreme Court ruling contradicts an earlier decision by a federal judge that ruled that the Department of Homeland Security targeted individuals unlawfully using racial profiling during Los Angeles area immigration raids, likely violating the Fourth Amendment. Jeremy Robbins, executive director of the American Immigration Council, describes the troubling ramifications associated with the Supreme Court's action.
Whether you're a U.S. citizen, an immigrant who's here legally, whether you're undocumented, if you speak with an accent or are speaking Spanish, if you are near a place like a construction site or places where immigrants disproportionately work, you would be stopped to verify your legal status.
Mr. Robbins points out that it's not only the court's ruling that has people concerned, but how the ruling took place, raising questions about transparency and how the law is being used.
It was the rarest of occasions when the Supreme Court would use the emergency docket. All of a sudden, what was a unique and rare situation of using the emergency docket without letting court cases get fully heard has become much more normalized.
You want to have reasonable suspicion that there's a crime, and your mere existence can't be that suspicion alone.
Shauna Kiefer is a Minnesota defense attorney.
That's what's really raising the spidey sense on the criminal defense community and anyone that's a constitutional scholar.
Ms. Kiefer says that when it comes to Minnesota, the state has historically worked to fortify the rights that protect citizens under the Fourth Amendment.
So states are allowed to expand constitutional protections. They're not allowed to take away. So you can't make your constitution less protective, but you can cover more things. And Minnesota has done that. And we've done that post-George Floyd and before George Floyd.
We still don't fully know how the ruling will impact Minnesotans, since the state hasn't had the same presence of federal forces this year as other areas. However, Ms. Kiefer believes the state is in a better place overall when it comes to interactions with law enforcement.
Minnesota has consistently protected our citizens to a greater extent than even other states. We're in a little bit different situation as to how this would apply.
During a press conference, DHS Secretary Kristi Noem asserted her department's position.
We have all the right in the world to go out on the streets and to uphold the law and to do what we're going to do. So none of our operations are going to change.
For North Star Stories, I'm Jose Osoria.
You are listening to North Star Stories. A proposal in Congress could reshape how the U.S.-Canada border is patrolled near Minnesota's boundary waters. The Borderlands Conservation Act would allow Homeland Security to build roads, fences, and surveillance systems within 100 miles of the border. Supporters of the bill say it strengthens national security, but wilderness advocates warn it would undo decades of environmental protection and change how visitors experience the area.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
Today, a warning about a new scam targeting Minnesotans. Then, a march at the state capitol questioning people's rights. And why the state is lowering walleye limits for a popular lake. I'm Chantel Sings. Officials are warning residents about scam text messages claiming to be from the state of Minnesota or the Department of Human Services. The text asks for EBT card numbers, which stand for Electronic Benefits Transfer PINs, which are personal identification numbers or other personal information. The text often links to fake websites. Authorities say neither the state nor counties will ever request EBT information by text. Anyone who receives a suspicious message should delete it, avoid clicking links, and report it by calling the EBT customer service line. In today's main story, hundreds of people recently gathered at the Minnesota State Capitol and in cities across the nation to raise awareness about civil rights concerns. Catherine DeSalle was there and has this story.
Mothers, daughters, teachers, students, neighbors, nurses, women from every walk of life standing together side by side in the same red that says, "We will not bow. We will not be silent."
That's Deb, co-founder of the Handmaids of Minnesota. She's speaking at the National Handmaids Day of Action at the Minnesota State Capitol earlier this month, an event aimed at protecting civil and reproductive rights.
Every cloak, every bonnet, every single flash of crimson in this crowd, it's a symbol, a flare of defiance against a system that would rather we stay silent.
Inspired by Margaret Atwood's novel, The Handmaid's Tale, Deb and many other attendees wore red capes and white bonnets to symbolize their resistance to restrictions of civil rights.
When this all began, it was just a few of us, a handful of women standing on the steps of the Capitol. We didn't plan to start a movement that day. We couldn't wait for someone else to make the move. It would have to be us. My body, my choice.
My body, my choice.
My future, my voice.
Also speaking at the event, Kristen, an organizer from the Minnesota Abortion Action Committee.
We fight for bodily autonomy, trans liberation, and reproductive justice.
The Minnesota Abortion Action Committee was founded in 2022 after the overturning of Roe v. Wade. This ended the nearly 50-year constitutional right to abortion in the U.S., giving each state the decision to choose its own abortion laws. Minnesota is one of seven states where abortion is legal at any stage of pregnancy.
Every time I drive past the Planned Parenthood clinic, I see protesters organized by groups like Pro-Life Action Ministries, ready to harass anyone who tries to access essential health care.
Some in Minnesota want to put an end to abortions. Deborah Braun works as an education director for Pro-Life Action Ministries, a St. Paul-based organization that started in 1981.
The heart of our ministry is sidewalk counseling, where we go out to the abortion clinics and we offer women alternatives to abortion and help them through the pregnancy.
There are currently 8 clinics in Minnesota that provide abortion access.
We have sidewalk counselors at all of the abortion clinics in the state of Minnesota. This year so far, we've documented 49 babies saved.
According to the Minnesota Department of Health, in 2023, 2,860 women traveled to Minnesota for abortions from states that have restrictive abortion laws. The Handmaids of Minnesota say they are working to keep Minnesota a state where women have freedom over their reproductive rights. For North Star Stories, I'm Catherine DeSalle.
You are listening to North Star Stories. The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, or DNR, is reducing the winter walleye limit on Upper Red Lake to 4 fish, with only one over 17 inches allowed. That's down from 5 during the open water season. The DNR fisheries manager says the lake's popularity is prompting the change. Walleye management is a joint effort between the Red Lake Nation and the Minnesota DNR.
North Star Stories is produced by AMPERS, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ampers.org.
In today's segment, special election results keep the DFL in control of Minnesota's Senate, then a historic political victory for a St. Paul community, and how Minnesota will recognize Transgender Day of Remembrance. I'm Gracie J. Well, both Minnesota Senate special elections were retained by their parties, preserving the DFL's 34-33 majority. Representative Amanda Hemmingson-Yeager won the District 47 race previously held by Nicole Mitchell, whose seat became vacant after Mitchell's burglary conviction. Hemmingson-Yeager's victory will prompt another special election in the House. The District 29 seat, left open by the passing of Republican Senator Bruce Anderson, stayed in GOP hands with a win by Michael Holmstrom. Next, the city of St. Paul has long been home to one of the country's largest Hmong communities. This year's mayoral election gave that community a historic victory. Zan Holston has the story.
My name is Kali Herr, and I'm proud to stand before you today as the first Asian and the first woman mayor-elect for the city of St. Paul.
Last week, Democrat State Representative Kali Herr made history when she became the next mayor of St. Paul. After just a three-month campaign, Herr defeated two-term incumbent Mayor Melvin Carter, the city's first Black mayor. She previously worked as policy director for Carter.
This wasn't about running against something. It was about running for our city and the people who make this a great city.
The 52-year-old first won a seat in the Minnesota House of Representatives in 2018. Along with Brooklyn Center's Samantha Vang, the two became the first Hmong women to be elected to the Minnesota House. Since then, she's been a steady presence in the Capitol, organizing DFL support and keeping her caucus united on major votes. At Hmong Village, a bustling indoor marketplace on St. Paul's east side, midday shoppers stop for lunch or groceries. For many here, hers win feels personal.
I was excited, very excited that, you know, someone who kind of represents the Hmong culture got elected to be a mayor.
Yua Yang was there with friends visiting from near Sacramento, California, for whom having a Hmong mayor is a little more common. Steve Lee became the first Hmong mayor in the U.S. in nearby Elk Grove, California in 2017, and Shang Tao was elected mayor of Oakland in 2023. For Yang, it's not just symbolic. It's recognition for a community that's helped shape the city's identity.
Because it's a large community here in St. Paul. So it's good to have somebody to represent the Hmong culture, the Hmong, and, you know, also be an eye-opener for other cultures that we do also exist.
I'm actually really excited for it because she, I believe, will be the first Hmong mayor in St. Paul here. So that's been something that has been very exciting for the Hmong community.
At her restaurant in Hmong Village, La Yang spoke about excitement around her new role. While Yang doesn't live in St. Paul and couldn't vote in the election, she said friends and family were actively involved in campaigning and voting.
There's a candidate that they really strongly believe in her causes and the things that she wants to accomplish here.
On the campaign trail, Herr promised to make St. Paul more business-friendly and to attract investment and expand opportunity. For Yang, that message resonates. But she says what matters most is what Herr represents for younger generations.
And I can't wait to see all the great work that she's going to get done here.
Herr's victory marks a milestone for St. Paul and the Hmong community. What comes next, supporters say, is turning that pride into progress. Herr takes office as St. Paul's next mayor in January, and Governor Tim Walz is expected to call a special election to fill her seat in the House soon. For North Star Stories, I'm Zan Holston.
You are listening to North Star Stories. Minnesota will hold a Transgender Day of Remembrance vigil at the State Capitol Rotunda on November 20th. The event honors transgender people whose lives were lost to anti-transgender violence and raises awareness about ongoing violence affecting the community. The observance began in memory of Rita Hester, a transgender woman killed in Massachusetts in 1998. This year's vigil is organized by the state's Inclusive Employee Resource Group for LGBTQIA2S+ employees.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
Welcome to Minnesota Native News. I'm Marie Rock. This week, how a small plane emergency landing is raising questions about tribal sovereignty and a Native All-American football game returns to the Twin Cities. First, producer Chaz Wagner tells us what happened after a small plane landed on the Red Lake Reservation.
Yeah, it was flying directly from Roseau to Bemidji. It was a beautiful Wednesday morning.
Minnesota pilot Darren Smedsmo was flying above Lower Red Lake on October 15th when he experienced catastrophic engine failure.
In my 1946 Stinson 108-1, got over Lower Red Lake and my engine had seized up.
He quickly prepared for an emergency landing on the closest road. A nearby Department of Transportation worker helped Smedsmo.
A neighbor of mine was right behind me, saw the whole thing. He works for the Department of Transportation, so he stopped traffic and called tribal police.
The Red Lake Tribal Police were the first to arrive on scene, quickly seizing the plane, citing a 1978 resolution prohibiting the flying of airplanes at a low altitude over Red Lake tribal lands.
I was supposed to have a court date of November 3rd. October 31st, I got a call from the prosecutor, and he told me that I could rip up that original ticket and that I should be expecting something in the mail.
Red Lake Tribal Government released a series of statements saying the landing created immediate safety, liability, and resource protection concerns for the tribe. Red Lake is the only closed reservation in Minnesota due to its refusal to participate in the 1887 General Allotment Act.
Red Lake maintained its hunting and fishing rights, and it is a little bit separate from the other tribes, the other Chippewa or Ojibwe tribes.
Rebecca Tweeden is a Red Lake citizen and a U.S. Army veteran. Red Lake Nation maintains the right to limit who can live there and who can visit.
As our ancestors didn't live in one place on this little allotted piece of land. They went with the seasons. And we have this little piece of land and we have to hold it because it's all we have.
Oh, I've flown over that area many times.
Darren Smedsmo says that he wasn't aware of any protocols about flying over Red Lake.
The flight school that I was on my way to had heard nothing about it, and they train over that land.
For Minnesota Native News, I'm Chaz Wagner.
Next, producer Dan Ninham talks to two of the coaches for the Native All-American football game and camp at Vikings Home Stadium.
You got to be somebody that understands teamwork, and you got talent. And so you got to use that talent to then work with other people.
That was Amon Green, Choctaw Nation, one of three coaches involved in the 2025 Native All-American football game and camp next month at U.S. Bank Stadium. Green is a former 12-year NFL running back and national champion college athlete.
The success is going to be getting 50-plus or more players to all be able to understand, like, you still got to play for one another, even though you just met each other.
The game is a collaboration between the Native American Athletic Foundation, the Minnesota Vikings, and the National Football League. The Vikings have hosted a similar game in 2022 and 2023.
I try to coach with love and coming with a counseling background.
Levi Horn, Northern Cheyenne, is another coach involved in this year's game. Horn also talked about his coaching philosophy.
I don't want to sit there and just send you running. I want to be able to break that down, what's going on.
Levi believes the success will come after the game.
The success is going to be them with their families. Those teachings that, maybe they didn't get right away. Maybe they weren't mature enough to get right away. And some of them are going to have the chance to go on and represent their tribes, our people, at a university.
For Amon, measuring success in this game goes beyond the final score.
We're human beings at the end of the day that we got to do something very extraordinary. And for me to be a part of this is just me paying it forward.
The 2025 Native All-American Football Game will take place on December 14th. For Minnesota Native News, I'm Dan Ninham.
That's all for this week's episode. Join us next time for more voices and stories that inform, uplift, and shape our communities right here on Minnesota Native News. Minnesota Native News is produced by AMPERS, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, made possible by funding from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota.
Support for KFAI comes from First Avenue, presenting Samara Joy, live at the Fitzgerald Theater, Friday, November 21st. Jazz vocalist Samara Joy is a rising star in the world of jazz. She's touring